Welcome to the Production Talk podcast with me, Jan of mixartist.com.au. In this podcast series, we celebrate the modern way of producing music. We want to talk about all things related to songwriting, recording at home, and music production. So if you produce your music at home, this is the place to be. Please subscribe and recommend this podcast to all your friends. This is the Production Talk podcast, episode 63. Welcome back to another episode of the Production Talk podcast. At the beginning of this episode, as always, I would like to acknowledge the traditional owners and custodians of the country that I'm recording this interview on today, the Arakwal people of the Bundjalung Nation, and I would like to express my thanks and gratitude to elders past, present, and emerging. Today is a very special day as we are continuing this series of interviews with phenomenal drummers. Over the last couple of weeks, we had amazing drummers on the podcast. You may want to go back to interviews with Adam Gardiner or Grant Garrethy or Lucius Borich from Cog. There were some amazing drummers among. Today, we are going to introduce the next drum master. He's been a professional drummer since the early 90s. He's had number one hit records, he's toured the world, and his band has won 21 ARIA awards. With us today is founding member of Silverchair, Ben Gillies. Welcome to the podcast. How are you?
Oh, Jan, what an amazing intro. Thank you for having me.
Look, I really hope I got all these facts right, but there was so much more that I could have put in there. You've had an amazing career in music.
Oh, thanks, man. Yeah, look, I think, you know, it sounded right to me.
Okay. Good. Look, in addition to all the music that that you've got on, you've got a lot going in your life. If you don't mind me talking about this, you're a young dad.
That's right.
How's the family?
No, the family's great. The boys are, so we've got, for those that don't know, that are listening, we have twin boys. They're about 10 months old. And they are lots of energy and they take up lots of my time, but that doesn't matter because I love them more than life itself. And it's fantastic. You know, it's
great.
If you don't have a child, I highly recommend it.
Fantastic. Do you get any sleep lately?
We do. We have been actually. We got a sleep expert, I guess, to come in for a few nights to help. Actually, she's like a maternity nurse, but she specializes in sleep for kids. So she came and stayed with us for a few nights to help us kind of train them, I guess, to, you know, self-soothe. And once we did that, mate, they sleep 12 hours a night.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's a godsend.
Yeah, it is. I think, you know.
Fantastic.
Considering twins, like if there is one win that you're going to have, I think that's the one. That's the one you need.
Well, look, let's talk about your music career. How often have you toured the world in your life?
I don't know. It'd be interesting actually to go back and just calculate how many times we would have circumnavigated the planet. But I don't know, maybe, I mean, it's a guess. I really don't know, maybe 20 or 30 or something. But we've definitely, particularly those early days with Silverchair, like we toured quite a lot, all through the US and Europe. And we didn't really do Asia. We did a few dates in Asia early on. But yeah, look, you know, we've done our fair share of touring and traveling. And
are there any highlights in your touring career that you're happy to share with us?
Yeah, I think the gig for me that is the standout is Rock in Rio. I mean, I've said that in several interviews, and I mean, it was just, I think it was a bit of a pinnacle for the band. Like, you know, we were really united as a band, and we were I think our musical abilities were really starting to flourish at that stage. And yeah, and just getting on stage in front of 250,000 people in Brazil was incredible. So yeah, it was just a bit of a magical moment. So I'll never forget it.
Nice. Can you talk to us about the beginnings of Silverchair? You know, you started as a fairly young teenager, I guess, if that's right to say.
Yeah, early teens.
What was it like to start? How did the first recordings come together? Can you describe how that eventuated?
Well, actually, we started before the band took off. We tried our darndest to get into the studio as much as we could. There was like a little two-track four-track recording studio in Newcastle that we went to, and there was another place in Cardiff in Newcastle. I think it was called Platinum Studios. I can't remember the guy's name that used to run it. But this is like when we were like 12 and 13. But yeah, we always enjoyed the recording side of being artists and being in a band. And I think it's funnily enough, I think we had just enough experience to be able to pull it off when the band took off, because we were only 14. We definitely had some level of confidence when we went into the studio. So we didn't really understand it.
Yeah.
At that stage, you get in there and you're just being told to play. You don't understand what they're actually doing or the technical stuff behind it. But, you know, over time and experience, you start, understanding what's going on.
Mm. So the first recordings were done in a small studio in Newcastle. Did I get that right?
Not the music that was eventually released to the public. I guess just as from the first recording that was released under Silverchair was recorded at the Triple J Studios in Sydney, or maybe they're called the ABC Studios, I'm not sure. And that was with a producer called Phil McKellar. I guess leading up to that moment, we felt like we had, we'd had maybe three or four or five recording experiences already. We knew, we had a rough understanding of how it all works and how it all comes together and what our roles were during the process. So,
okay.
Yeah.
So you've basically been in all kinds of studios, from, smaller ones at the beginning to the big ABC studios, and I guess, the best of the best for your, albums that you released throughout the years.
Yeah.
What difference does it make to be in a, small local studio or, in a big professional studio?
To be honest with you, I believe, and maybe this is more so now, that there's a bit of a balancing act between the gear that you have and the person that's operating it, and then the performers. So yep. I don't think it really matters if you're in a small studio, but there's definitely, sonically, there's definitely a difference between, equipment that isn't top quality and the equipment that is top quality. Like, there's just a sonic difference that's undeniable. But if you had a tiny little studio in Newcastle or anywhere that was, basically just a room and a control room, or even, you could even have it all in one room and let it all bleed together, I don't think it matters. But if you've got, some nice mics, some nice preamps, and, you've got someone behind, driving the car that knows what they're doing.
Yeah.
I think you can pull a cool, really cool sound.
Yeah.
I think some of those early recordings that Silverchair did was done on, equipment. I don't even know what it was done on, but I think it was equipment. I remember seeing it like a tape deck in one of the control panels at the studio. And look, I think it was, they weren't using Neves, let's put it that way.
Yeah, right. Yeah, of course.
So, yeah, I don't know, but there's still like, there's always a charm in any of it, Like,
yeah.
I think that the beauty of recording and the beauty of writing and being creative and to kind of put it all under one umbrella, like, I think you can find a charm in anything.
Mm.
If you go out and you buy like a, the cheapest mic and the cheapest recording setup, and that's all you've got, but you've got a cool idea, like, and particularly with some of the tech, you know all this yarn, like, that some of the technology you have in the box these days, you can have the crappiest gear, but you can make it sound really cool.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Okay. I guess when you started releasing albums with Silverchair, that was in the early to mid 90s, I believe 95. Yeah. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah.
chances are that was probably recorded to analog tape at that time, wasn't it?
That's right. Yeah, we recorded all of the Silverchair albums to 2-inch tape.
Oh, really? Even Young Modern in 2007? Yeah, right. Okay. Yeah. Talk to me about the why, please. What is it you like about it?
I don't fully understand, and maybe you can explain this, Jan. I don't fully understand why the tape, just particularly for me, but particularly for drums, I guess, the tape just gives the drums this warmth and it compresses it or does something to it that just makes it sound so punchy and warm and beautiful. Yeah. That is, you know, it's really hard to emulate when you're not going through a tape machine.
That's right, yeah. It's called saturation.
So we always use 2-inch tape with Silverchair.
Okay. And there are obviously some disadvantages with tape. You know, it's got finite space. You know, it runs out after half an hour. Then you need to change it, and they don't always sound exactly the same. Have you had any negative experiences with analog tape as well?
I would say no. I would say some of the producers that we've worked with may disagree. I remember Nick Launay. So I guess like when you're working in Pro Tools, right, you say if you do half a dozen performances of a song and then, you know, to get that best take, you might take, I don't know, the chorus from take three and put it on the, you know, the verses from take five, or, you know, you might grab the verse from take one, or whatever kind of, you know, whatever you put together. I mean, I always find the least amount of edits is the best way to go anyway.
Oh, I agree so much. Yeah.
Yeah, but edits are totally normal, right? Because there is sometimes there just might be a little magic in one take that doesn't quite have it in another take. So I remember Nick Launay doing it, and I and Kevin Shirley did it as well, but I wasn't quite as aware of it when Kevin was doing it, the who produced Frog Stomp. But Nick Launay, I remember watching him edit the 2-inch tape with a razor. And to
razor
me, that's
sticky tape, yeah. Wow.
And sticky tape, which is just like, you know, even this day and age, like, it's just to do something like that would give me a heart attack, like trying to.
There's no undo button.
Yeah, there's no undo. I know. There's no Command Z. Like,
make a mistake, that's it. You know,
it's a real commitment. Actually, one great thing that happened on one of the Silverchair songs, it's called No Association, he misjudged where the edit was. So he actually added two beats to, I think it's a verse, one of the verses. Anyway, so he did the edit and he was like, well, use this verse with this chorus or whatever it was. And he added two beats. And I remember we came back in, he said, hey, guys, I made a bit of a mistake with the edit. I can redo it. I can fix it. I can just got to chop them out, the extra two beats. But it's kind of cool. Do you want to hear it? And maybe we'll leave it in. So, yeah, we heard it back and was like, it's a bit of a weird kind of twist in the song, but it's cool as shit. And we were like, let's leave it.
Oh, really? And did you play it like this afterwards, you know, live and shows and so on?
I don't remember. We haven't played that song for a long time. I don't recall if we did or not.
Okay.
I don't remember playing it live. Mm. And I remember the timing of it was really bizarre too. Like, it kind of made it really weird.
A lucky
accident.
When
you hear it. Yeah, it was a total happy accident. We like it when they happen.
Yeah, cool, nice. Then you've got an incredible, powerful rock sound. Now the drums just sound punchy, in your face, loud, as if you hit him like the Hulk every single hit. It's just huge.
Yeah.
How much of this sound is attributed to your playing technique or your instrument or the production? Can you give us an idea of how that fits together?
Yeah, I think it's a combo of all three.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
It's like when you do a sound check, you know, and either in the studio or for a live show, you know, if the producer's asking you to hit certain drums, like, you know, sometimes a drum tech might get on there or someone else might get on there if I'm busy or whatever to hit the drums, you know, and I reckon dozens of times throughout the career of the band, producers have commented like, oh, well, we need Ben to hit it because he just hits it differently. And that's true for every drummer. Like every drummer just strikes the drum differently. So it's definitely how you play. But I also think, you know, like we were talking about the compression on the 2-inch tape, it's definitely the, you know, some of the tools that you're using as well, you know, is important to get that kind of that punchy sound.
Okay. And can you share what drum sets you prefer to use in the studio?
I don't know if you can, well, we're not using video here, Jan, but you can see behind me that there's a little nice little soprano kit there. Mm. But yeah, I like the sopranos. My drum teacher when I was about 18, I think I had a teacher, even though the band was successful, I had a teacher until I was about 20 or early 20s.
Mm.
Or mid 20s. Anyway, because, you know, I think we are all always learning.
So true.
And he had a soprano kit, and I went into a couple of shows that he did, and he was a jazz, you know, his jazz was his main kind of focus. And every time I heard his kit, I was like, oh man, that thing just sounds so beautiful. Like it had this warmth and roundedness to it. That I just loved, and maybe that was me getting a bit older, I'm not sure. Like, I guess I really liked the Pearl drums that I used a lot when I was younger, but they were great for rock sound. But I don't know, the Sopranos, they just sound unbelievable.
Mm.
So yeah, that's what I got.
Nice. And what's your choice of drum heads?
My drum heads are the Remo. Oh, let me check. I think they're Emperors.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I love Emperors.
Remo coated Emperors, yeah.
Yeah, let me just think about that. Aren't they like thinner versions of pinstripes?
I should know. I'm not a super techie drum guy, but I think they're like a double ply, like coated head. Like say it's like an ambassador, but it's a double coated head.
Yeah. They can take a stronger hit. Yeah,
nice. Yeah, that's it. They've just got a bit of they've got a bit more durability.
Yeah,
and they but they're good. Like good, you know, if you're laying into the toms too, they just give you that, you know, nice kind of tribal kind of rock vibe. You know,
yeah, nice.
That's what we want.
Beautiful. And what are your preferred cymbals?
I've used Sabian. I've had a Sabian endorsement for forever. They've been so good to me.
Lovely.
But at the moment, let me look what's on here.
They sound great.
Mm. They do. They sound beautiful. That's a suspended. That's a HH. Oh, that's right. The ones that I'm really loving at the moment are called Sabian Complex is the series. They're a hand-hammered cymbal, and they're pretty – they're just gorgeous. They've got like a – yeah, they're not too loud. I find, you know, I think when you're younger, you're like, you know, you really like loud, harsh cymbals.
Yeah.
And this, I certainly did. They were loud and, oh, they were, I mean, if I heard them now, I'd be like, that's disgusting. Please stop. But, yeah, look, I think, I mean, as far as cymbals go, like, you know, they're all so good at, you know, you could pick any brand and if any sound and just pick what you like. They're all so good.
That's right,
You know, nice. Even the cheapies, like, they're good.
Let's just go one step back before we talk more about studio. The songs that you wrote with Silverchair, I guess they probably originated somewhere in a rehearsal room or so. How much did they change until they were finally recorded? Was the arrangement, the lyrics, was that all basically dialed in from the beginning, or did the songs evolve over time?
Yeah, the songs always, or almost always, evolved. There was like a process that they would go through. With the band, and you know, even like sometimes even management would have, you know, I guess that management were very careful, you know, where they kind of got involved. But there were certain songs that they had, you know, they had their opinion on, and certain songs that they were actually really right on as well. But yeah, you know, like through rehearsal, and because so on the early records, Dan and I wrote a lot together, and then Dan kind of took over the songwriting later on. But even then, like, you know, so like once you play a song as a band, you might have an idea of what it sounds like, you know, if you're on your own kind of coming up with an idea. But once you play it in a band setting, you know, you do make little adjustments, you know, and particularly for me too, like,
yep.
like I didn't have any drum parts. Like if the songs didn't have drum parts, so you just play what you feel.
Mm.
And then so over time, like I would adjust my drum parts to, you know, you want to accent certain things. And then sometimes whatever Dan was singing or whatever the lyrics were, I didn't always know what they were. And so when I started hearing the melody and the lyrics, you might kind of, you know, make slight adjustments to those parts. But also, you know, then another part of that process is, you know, when you get a producer involved, you know, you go into pre-production and then I guess a producer's role, it isn't always to, I think a good producer doesn't automatically just try and change songs.
Yeah.
I think a good producer helps enhance a song, you know, or gives you that perspective because you can, you know, when you're in it, when you're inside of it, it's really hard to step away from yourself and have that perspective. So they also, I always found producers, it was always important for Silverchair to have producers because they helped give us that perspective that we weren't able to see, you know, and make suggestions, you know, for changes or trying different structures or, you know, does this song, you know, can you cut parts out to kind of that are unnecessary or whatever it was.
Yeah.
So, look, there was quite a process, you know, before you get into the studio and the red light's on and you're like, we're doing it for real.
Yeah, of course. And how much time did you spend in the studio for your records? I guess that varied probably, but can you give us a rough idea?
Yeah, it varied. Like the first record, I think we did Frog Stomp in like 3 weeks. Like we just got in there and it was even less. It was like 10 days.
Okay.
And then we did, I think Freak Show was like 3 weeks. Neon Ballroom was like 6 weeks, I think. And then the last two records, like they blew out, like they were like months. But also like the last two Silverchair records had a lot more orchestration on them as well. So that obviously takes a lot more time and planning to get those parts together.
I love the sound of Diorama. They're all phenomenal in their own way.
Thanks, man. I think, David Bottrell was probably one of my favorite producers to work with. He was just really honest and he just gave us honest feedback. And it was like, I think at that point in anyone's career, it's important to, you know, to hear that kind of feedback. And it was, you know, he'd just call us on stuff like that's not working or, you know, we need to change this on. Yeah, he was great. I really like. I've enjoyed working with all the producers. I would have actually liked to have done another record with Kevin, who did Frog Stomp, because we were so young. I just, you know, and Kevin's great. He's awesome. Like he's really raw and just like, you know, I have such good memories of recording that record with him. But yeah, like it would be fun to record with Kevin. You know, once we're a little more aware.
Frog Stomp came together and you said about 10 days and then the later records took a lot more time. Can you talk us through the pros and cons of, you know, having a short and punchy recording session in the studio, just, you know, in, laid down and out again, or a really lengthy, extensive one? Is that necessarily a better way? What are your thoughts?
I think one of the challenges of saying that you're going in to do a record is that when you do hit play, like record, you kind of like you almost tense up and you're almost like, oh, this has got to be the best take of, you know. And I think the aim of the game is actually to relax and not worry about it. And I always found that a lot of Silverchair's demos, like, you know, a part of me was like, oh, we should just use that.
Yeah, right.
Because the demos were always really relaxed and not worried about it being so perfect. And just had a raw energy about it. That's ultimately what you're trying to capture. So I think in terms of that, I think that the good thing about the way we recorded Frog Stomp is that we just got in there and did it. We weren't thinking too much about it. It might have had something to do with the fact that we were young and there was no success at that point. So we were just like, you know, we had nothing to lose, or we weren't, you know, we didn't have another album that people are going to compare it to, or whatever, you know, issue that might arise. So we just kind of went in there and just banged it out. And, you know, I remember Kevin suggesting that we put some keys on it, some keyboards, and we were like, nah, man, nah, nah, that's uncool. You don't put keyboards on this. So, yeah, I don't know. I think there's, you know, I think artists and bands, when you go in to do a record, you're fighting against that tension you feel when you're like, when you're finally doing the recording, right?
That's, you know, right, that's,
yeah. And I also think that's why, you know, a lot of, like when I record my music, like I love using stuff that you record on the fly because 9 times out of 10, you're not thinking about it. You're not worrying about it. You just say going like, oh, this feels good. And that's what you want to capture.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think as time went on with Silverchair, that the fighting against the red light was one of the things that I used to think about.
So it's in many ways it's actually a mental game, and you know, overcoming nervousness and the pressure of being sort of under the microscope in some ways, you know, all the microphones are aimed at you, there are producers watching you through the window, and
yeah,
then it's actually an environment that doesn't really work for performing effortless and blissful and with a lot of joy, because the pressure builds. So can you give us some practical examples? What can you do? You know, if you're in the studio and you feel this crunch, what can you do to loosen yourself up again?
I think it's just trying to be in the moment, you know, and not kind of, when you're a musician and you're confident at your instrument, or you're confident in what you're doing, or you've done lots of rehearsal and you're ready to record it, it's almost when it comes to that moment that you need to record or perform, you know, do your performance, that you just let it all go, that you need to clear your mind, let it all go, and then just let it happen naturally. And the great thing about recording is it doesn't matter if you make a mistake, because you just hit stop and you go again.
Yeah, you know? Of course. Mm.
And if, you know, if you do dozens of takes and you still don't get the right one, just go and take a break for an hour and try again. Like that's the beauty of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I mean, that's way easier said than done.
Okay.
But, you know, I think for me, like, yeah, it's just being really present in the moment. And I find that's when you can block it all out and just listen, like literally just listen to the music. Listen to the, one other thing that we also used to do on Silverchair is like we'd always play the whole track together to get that, you know, to get the initial drum track. So, you know, you're feeding off each other and you're listening to each other. And I think that's a really important part of capturing that magic as well.
So you said the entire band performed together in the studio, so everybody could see each other, look each other in the eye, and were those pilot takes or guide tracks, or were those the final takes?
I think early on we used to do that to capture the drums.
Yeah,
and then Dan and Chris would go back and they'd overdub new guitar parts. But I do think on Young Modern, we were like, why would we get rid of those, that initial bed of the three of us together? Like ultimately, that's the core of the band.
Mm.
And I always wondered why. You know, obviously you layer up the guitars.
Yeah.
You know, you might have to fix up a couple of little, if there's a couple of bum guitar or bass notes, you might have to tidy them up. But I always wondered why they would go back and do overdubs, because you've got this such a great bed that, so like, I don't get it. But anyway, but yeah, I think on Young Modern we did do that, as far as I recall. We did use more of the kind of band, those initial band performances, as like the basis of the tracks.
Yeah, nice one. Look, that's also what I figured out for myself. It's my preferred way of recording a band. And what I often get that way when I track bands all together in one room often is, you know, a bit of spiel. You know, there's an occasional little bum note in there that's not perfect, but there's a certain magic often that I get, you know, a vibe that I often don't feel when a band overdubs, just drummer to the click and then bass onto the drums and all that. It's often musically more perfect and I guess sonically more separated, and but there's a certain vibe that I just love about recording a band in one room. So I can really resonate with what you just said. I would assume that the vocals were probably just guides and they were then later laid on again.
The vocals were definitely guards.
Of course, that makes sense. How do you play a drum groove? You know, some of your drumming is highly complex, but there are also some really straight bits that really hold the band together.
Yeah,
and they groove like crazy. That's few notes played, but it just grooves so much. It's so deep in the pocket.
Yeah.
I can play the same notes. I'm an average drummer, but I could play the same beat, but it would sound terrible. What's the difference? What is it that you can put into a drum groove that other people cannot? Can you share that? What's going on in your mind when you do that?
That's a funny question. I don't know. Hey, I actually don't know the answer to that.
Okay.
I think, I was slightly obsessed with John Bonham when I was growing up. Like he's my biggest influence. I mean, I'm sure he's the biggest influence of bloody thousands of drummers, but
definitely,
you know, I'm happy to put my hand up and say I'm one of them. And I think Bonham had a real, like, he just, you know, you can, I think there's a certain level in drumming when you can take the same tempo and you can sit back in it, or you can sit on top of it, and or you can sit right on it, you know. And I always found that Bonham kind of sat just behind it. Just behind the group, just behind the beat, and it just gives it this heaviness and this kind of, it does, it's this groove that kind of just, it's like you're in a swamp, you know, just kind of trying to walk through a swamp, but you're really enjoying it, you know, with big gumboots or something.
I love that.
So to me, I don't know, I think I just listened to so much Led Zeppelin when I was growing up that, subconsciously I just tapped into that Bonham vibe, you know, and obviously made it my own. Like, you always make it your own because we're all individual musicians, you know, you can't help but not put your own signature on your sound. But yeah, I think that's it. I've just, you know, I've Bonhamized myself, I guess.
Well, I still need to figure out how to do that myself, but thank you for sharing. Music is produced very differently today than it was in the 90s and 2000s and so on. You know, there's lots of, we've got new technologies and, you know, we've had the coronavirus and all, everything has changed. What advice would you have for young musicians who start out today? You know, the people who are 14, 15 forming bands right now.
Oh, I don't know. It's funny. I think when we started, we just loved it so much. Like, we loved what we were doing. We were so excited by music. And look, we were really ambitious. Like, we wanted to, like, we talked about, I remember Dan and I in particular talked a lot about, you know, we want to be this great band and we want to be the biggest band in the world. But, you know, I think deep down inside it was very much at the surface. We just loved what we were doing. And I think that's really important. I mean, obviously, like, you know, you hear that, it's maybe it's a bit cliche, but everyone says, you know, you need to enjoy what you're doing. And I think there, it's just because it's true doesn't mean it's a cliche. Like, it is true. I believe, you know, like,
yep,
you know, my old man was a plumber for 55 years and I can guarantee you he didn't enjoy it. So, you know, do it because you love it. Don't do it because, you know, you want to be famous or you want to be, I mean, you can be ambitious for sure, but the baseline, the needs to be that you just love making the sound that you make and you love performing with the songs that you've written. And, you know, maybe you really love performing with the guys that you're in the band with, like, you know, that camaraderie as well can be, there's something really kind of special about that as well, that I really enjoyed.
So true.
But yeah, you just love it. And then, you know, you got to work at it. Like, I think you need to, you know, you got to put the time in, like, you know, like, master your instrument, like, you know, practice, like, it really, it, like, challenge yourself musically as well. I think in Silverchair, like, you know, we were all growing as musicians, and we're all always pushing ourselves and looking to how we can improve and try new things. That's important as well. But yeah, if I was 14 again, I'd just be like, just enjoy what you're doing.
That's great advice. Thank you. Ben, can you talk about your current projects? What are you up to these days?
I've kind of been releasing my own music under Ben Gillies, which, you know, I have so much fun doing, and I've worked with some different producers, and, you know, I've done a bunch of film clips, and I've got more in the works. And yeah, man, I guess it's like what I was just saying. I do what I do because, and I keep doing what I do because, you know, it just gives me so much joy. And, you know, when you get on the piano and you come up with a really cool chord progression with a kick-ass melody, and, you know, you lay it down in Pro Tools and you play some drums to it and you hear it back, and you lay down a bass line, you know, when you play it all back and you go like, yeah, cool, that's, you know, I really dig that.
Yeah.
And, you know, that whole process of writing and recording and playing, and like, it's just, it's like that flow state. People talk about this flow state. When you get into that zone, when you're in that flow state and you're almost not thinking, you just whatever expressions are coming out of you through whatever instrument you're doing, if it's on your computer or an actual, you know, keyboard or whatever, when you're in that flow state, like, it's just so joyous.
Yeah.
And to have the pleasure of finding something in your life that you can have that experience in is also a pleasure. So, yeah, I love it, man. I really enjoy writing and recording and playing and working with different producers. And, yeah, man, I love it. I mean, I'll be doing it until I'm an old man. Maybe I think I already am an old man, apparently. You're an old man of 42?
No, come on. You've got young kids. You're in your best years. You're also on YouTube with your project Behind the Beat, which is, you know, definitely a gem for Silverchair fans. And, you know, can you just explain what's going on there?
I just had an idea, and I just thought it would be fun to play through the drum parts and kind of explain what I was thinking and why I did certain things on the drums. And then I just thought it would be fun to, you know, add in some old Silverchair stories as well, or some background on the tracks. You know, no real reason why I did it. Like, it's maybe I was just feeling nostalgic a couple of years ago, and I was going to do it a fair while ago, but I guess, you know, pregnancy and babies got in the way. And oh, they didn't get in the way. They just happened.
Yeah.
But they do restrict you from enough time to do anything, really. So, but I managed to squeeze them in. And yeah, man, I've really enjoyed doing those, and I'm going to do some more. And even some songs like I know Pure Massacre is one of the tracks. You know, I haven't played Pure Massacre in 20 years. So go back and, you know, I had to go into a rehearsal space and kind of practice it and, you know, get my chops back up with it, just because, I mean, they're all pretty, like you said, they're not, my drum parts aren't super complex. Some of them are more challenging, but, you know, Pure Massacre is like, it's not a super hard song, but, you know, even just to kind of lock back into the groove that I was playing when I was, 14 or 15 years old, like it, and some of the timing actually, because I don't know if you noticed on the Behind the Beat series that a lot of the Silverchair recordings, actually the majority of the Silverchair recordings, we didn't use a click track.
Okay.
So particularly that in those early recordings, so what that meant was that, you know, 14 and 15-year-old drummer, like, man, your tempos are, like, my tempos were all over the place. So, you know, now, like, you know, I guess more just with more experience, like, you lock in a lot easier just to sit in on like one tempo. So it was actually challenging as a 40-year-old to, you know, have those really big tempo shifts. And even like there's almost like micro tempo shifts in some of the songs, like just little moments just slow down for no good reason, then pick back up again, and you're there like kind of playing along, going like, "Holy shit, dude! Like, what were you thinking?"
Well, you know, people love it.
Yeah,
just the way it was, and it's just the way it came out of you back then. So it's like
And maybe people didn't maybe people didn't notice it, you know, or maybe I'm just noticing it because
it's lovable.
Yeah. Yeah, so yeah. I don't know.
I find that, you know, the right amount of little imperfections makes a performance lovable. If there's no imperfection, if it's just perfect, that's usually boring. Well, I guess with some exceptions, but if it gets too clean, it doesn't groove as much, in my opinion. Yeah, exactly. I always like to, you know, I like to listen to music and visualize what the drummer is doing, how he moves his hands, or what the singer is singing, you know, what face expression he or she has. And, you know, these things, I need to relate to the humans. And so imperfections are actually a good thing to some degree, I reckon.
Yeah, I agree, man.
Ben, where can our listeners find out more about you? Have you got a website? Have you got social channels? Where could we follow you?
On social media, my handle is BenGillies888, and then my website is just BenGillies.com.
Okay.
Yeah, man. I'm on all of the popular social networks. So
fantastic! I'm going to put all the links into the show notes. So once you're done with the episode, just scroll down, hit the button, and check out what Ben is up to online. Ben, thank you so much for sharing all your wisdom with us today, and, you know, for your time today. I know that you're a very busy person, so I really, really appreciate that. And it's fabulous talking to you. Thank you so much.
No problem, mate. Thanks for having me.
Wow, how good was that? Master drummer Ben Gillies of Silverchair on the Production Talk podcast. Not only is he a real gun on the drums, but also just the most amazing human being. Funny story, before we recorded the episode, we had a quick chat about the talking points, and I said that I wanted to talk about overcoming nervousness in the studio. And sure enough, got nervous myself and couldn't get the intro together. So Ben guided me through and gave me the confidence and said, "You've got this." So I did it again and nailed it in the second part. But how good was that? Well, Ben, I really appreciate everything you've shared with us. What an amazing music career. I wish you all the best for your future projects and, of course, for your young family. And I really appreciate you sharing all your wisdom and knowledge with us today. Please check out Ben's social channels. Of course, his YouTube channel is warmly recommended. I really love his videos, Behind the Beat. It's amazing stuff, not only for drummers. Check it all out. If you want to reach out to me, of course, you can do so via my website, mixartist.com.au, which, as you may know, was a mixing-only website some time ago. However, nowadays we also offer recording services, and my website just received a full overhaul. So check it out and tell me what you think about it. And maybe you can spot some errors. I would love to iron them out. Let me know. No, in all honesty, I think it should be all good. Yes, reach out to me if you want to. I specialize in helping people finishing their projects effortlessly, painlessly, and quickly. And I think that's one of the most satisfying aspects of my work for me, to see people achieving their goals quickly and work together at a relatively quick pace, without rushing, of course. But getting people to the finish line is what I specialize in. So if you need any help, reach out to me via mixartist.com.au. Also, please subscribe to the podcast if this was your first episode. Check out all the other episodes before. They are phenomenal interviews with other amazing musicians among. And I would really appreciate if you could please give me 1 minute of your time and go to your podcast app and give us a 5-star rating, and a nice little positive comment would also be very much appreciated. Okay, and that's all for today. Next week we will continue with another interview, this time with two phenomenal musicians from the Northern Rivers. That's all for today. Bye for now.